Take two, Electric Boogaloo. This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're going over the sweetest thing. The sweetest thing. So, if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you on the flip side next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready?
For one dry kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-com movies where we essentially pour a new movie down your ear holes every week. Don't have time to watch that pesky television for 2 to 3 hours? We've got you covered. You finally got kicked off your cousin's Netflix account and you can't get your rom-com fix? We're here for you.
Yes.
And you've stopped by at such a great time because this week we are doing the 2002 classic The Sweetest Thing. Mm-hmm. And I am, of course, not doing this alone. I'm here with my lifelong bestie, who's so sweet she'd give you a toothache, Corinne Edding, and who's also super, super forgiving. Right?
Because we're doing take two, Electric Boogaloo, of this episode, after having recorded my part for an hour, and I am here with my bestie, who I call my sweetest thing, particularly when she presses the record button, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And it's so fitting because I looked at Corinne right when we started and said, did you press your record button? Yes. Corinne, did you press your record button? Yes. Guess who didn't? Me. And that was the one episode that was going to put us into the stratosphere.
I know.
But we only recorded an hour and 20 minutes of Corinne, not me. So we could potentially release that and you could fill in the blanks, but we thought we'd just stop and start over again.
Yeah. I think having long portions of silence with just hearing me breathe and chuckling occasionally may not be the best.
Occasionally?
Oh, excuse me. Oh, hilarious one. I'm sorry. It's a nonstop laugh track whenever Tamara reads. Yes.
That's right. I believe you mispronounced often.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Again, I am so sorry about that. Corinne, gentle listeners, I will drop it now, but I'm going to be groveling at her feet for a while because that super sucks.
You know, sometimes life happens. I'm here for it.
Sometimes life happens and you don't capture it by pressing record.
It's true. I'm going to do a vibrant reenactment of all of your portions. Don't you worry, Tam.
I just think this needs to be the Corinne show and we just got to, you know, call it what it is because every time you are strategically trying to cut me out of this podcast.
Okay, look, here's the thing is that I have my whole hour plus recorded and during the gaps, I am going to be performing on Saturday for Love Songs and Chocolate. I performed my piece for you on the ukulele before we recorded.
You did. Right.
And so during the portions where you would normally be speaking, it's just going to be like, stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. It's just over and over and over again ad nauseum.
Tamara, can you please press record on this thing? Dream a little dream of me.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right. You have your performance and your song was excellent. I look so forward to hearing it between all the gaps that you're going to fill with it on the original episode. Sans me.
It wouldn't be One Dry Kiss if you're not on here, Tamara. Come on.
Or really? Because you can argue. It's One Dry Kiss with one host.
Oh.
There's one in the title. We don't need two anymore. It's been established. You're out. You don't know how to press a button, you're cut off.
No. Besties for life. Thunder buddies forever.
Thunder buddies. Or Courtney and Christina's who are in this movie. And The Sweetest Thing does hold a special place in my heart, Corinne. I'm excited to find out what you thought of it, and I can imagine. But this movie is a glimpse into the early aughts.
I want to know why it holds a special place in your heart.
We'll have to get to it at the end
when
we do our whole Ooh. Our whole recap and our ratings, I will divulge it then, but not sooner.
Okay. Way to put a teaser out there. Jeez.
So they keep listening. I'm sure they're just dying to hear my opinions on this movie that they may or may not have seen.
Well, I'm dying to hear your opinions on this movie, so I'm going to keep sitting here throughout the whole thing for the script and everything so that I can find out at the end. Thank you very much. You have a very captive audience right here, this face.
Oh. Captive audience, did you press record?
Yes, ma'am. I've been recording for 6 minutes and 59 seconds.
This is going to be my obsession now. I am going to be obsessed with... Oh, God. No. It's like when you get in a car accident and then you're scared to get in the car for like the next 2 years. That's what I'm experiencing right now. And I'm like staring at that second light, just daring it to go off.
You know, here's the real truth of the matter is Tamara knows there's portions of this movie so far within the first hour of our recording that I have felt uncomfortable with. And she is just... She recorded her entire first section. She just wants to have me relive these moments over again is what this is really about.
Yes. And I've taken that information of all the bits that Corinne's uncomfortable with. And while we were doing the intro, I was silently typing on my iPad to extend them and draw them out. So they're longer now. You're welcome.
Wow. Thanks.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Well, they do say sharing is caring.
Sure. Well, I shared the hell out of this then. You're welcome, Corinne. Oh, and I forgot to tell you that Larry, he heard our most recent episode mm-hmm. that we recorded, which I believe right now is I Love You, Man.
Did he laugh his ass off? Because that was it was a great episode.
I don't know. He didn't specify, but he did say to tell... Sharon or Aaron or that's right, Corinne. Tell Corinne I said hello.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks. Love you too.
That's only retaliation because you forgot his name in that episode.
Yes, I did.
And I was like, it's not because you're forgettable. I swear to God, she just is horrible with names.
Yeah, no.
Or so she says.
It was totally fair play. I completely laugh at that. So, yeah.
We all secretly know you refer to him as Mr. Tamara.
Well, he looks really good with that title. I like it when he wears the sash, Mr. Tamara, and the tiara. It looks really good on him.
He does not. So, Corinne, do you want to try this again and give us a synopsis?
Yes, and my synopsis is so amazing. It'll just be like it's hitting your ears for the very first time.
Well, probably would feel that way because you were typing it earlier while we were like catching up. So.
This script was good. It was complete, but it was also stripped down. Didn't have any kind of like prompts or anything. No,
that
like
is fair.
Boldness or anything, you know, which is fine. But
no love letters to Corinne.
Yes.
And the Cookie Monster's voice.
Exactly. And so, yeah, I accidentally completely forgot to do the synopsis, but I had.
So what I'm hearing is you're saying that also is my fault. It's also my fault.
Yeah. It's your fault that I forgot to do the synopsis. Exactly. Right. Uh-huh. No.
Don't let the sun go down on me.
But it's okay. I forgive you, my child.
Thank you. I guess if you didn't, we wouldn't be here redoing it. Round two. Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. Synopsis. Christina, played by Cameron Diaz, is a hot 27-year-old who discards men like a person with a cold discards tissues. Until she runs into Peter, played by Thomas Jane, in a hopping club with a waterbed in it that takes her breath away. Because he doesn't just fall at her feet. The banter that he gave her was engaging. He invites her to an after party, but she doesn't go. Still, his presence haunts her. But how will she find him? Is he gone for good? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
My God, when you said haunting, I was like, we're not doing just like heaven again. This guy's fully alive.
Yes, but we are going to call Scooby and the gang to, you know, solve this mystery. Where is he?
To pull off the rubber mask and be like, it's just Peter.
Again.
Again. Coincidentally, gentle listeners, my first movie of the month was I Love You Man, where the main character was Peter Klavan. The love interest in The Sweetest Thing is called Peter Donahue, and they are both real estate agents. Is there a subliminal message going on here? I don't know.
I like how you really like to spice things up with, you know, different things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a different guy, just named Peter. Peter, 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 Peter. Peter, 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 Peter.
This Peter is blonde. The previous Peter was brunette. See?
Yes, he was. They both had their faces on...
bus benches.
Yes. Benches, yes.
Speaking of faces on bus benches, Tamara. This has nothing to do with a face on a bus bench. Because
thank you.
Do you like to get us started on The Sweetest Thing?
I guess so. It's a slick little segue there, Corinne.
Yeah, I know, right? Clever, right?
It's really slick. It's seamless. Totally seamless. We open with big white letters on a black screen that reads, "Tell us about Christina Walters." Then we get an interview montage of five guys that had dated or just spent a night out with Miss Walters and all describe her as a gorgeous player that every guy wants to date, but she's not interested in commitment. Mm. In looking at the guys, I'm not really surprised. One guy, after speaking about her, gets so worked up he flies off his stationary bike. Another one gets a nosebleed, obsessing over why she didn't call. She called. She said she was going to call, but she didn't call. And I don't understand why she didn't call, because I said by the phone all nice, because she said she would call.
In Japan, a nosebleed is symbolic of sexual arousal.
Then that's fitting, because mm-hmm. his nose is bleeding all over the place.
Yes.
What? Why is nosebleeds only sexual arousal in Japan?
It's the anime.
Oh.
So in the anime, there'll be like a boy who's like, ha! And then his nose will be like, psh! Almost like in South Park, how Stan always barfs.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh.
Yeah. And so
sad. I'm missing all that blood in all the anime cartoons.
Yeah.
Shucks.
Yeah.
So obviously he liked her a lot. Anyways, mm-hmm. and yet another guy is talking all about the groundwork he laid one night
Ooh.
That was unrequited while his female coworker attempts to unsuccessfully place heavy reams of paper on a high shelf. Well, he is totally not helping.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the shower guy. Mm. I have so many questions.
Don't you have like a person interviewing you in your shower all the time?
Every time. Mm-hmm. Every time I have to make sure that I am butt booty naked and soaking wet with my phone in my hand so that I can call back this hottie that I met at a club, but then inexplicably get the movie phone, aka a wrong number.
Mm.
And yeah, he's doing all this, and we are supposed to believe that there is literally somebody standing in front of him with a video camera that said, "Who's Christina Walters to you?" Does it make sense in the end, Corinne?
No. This movie is a fever dream, and I thought that there might be some kind of an explanation for the documentary-style questions that were happening right in the beginning.
Yes.
And they kind of bring it around in the end, but in the most useless way possible, giving absolutely no elucidation as to what's going on.
Right. Yes. And continue with this mosaic of hilarity that is The Sweetest Thing. We cut to the woman herself, Christina Walters, played by Cameron Diaz. She is shaking her booty mm-hmm. up one of San Francisco's quintessential steep hills to Macy Gray's Sexual Revel, Sexual Revel, Sexual Revolution song. She's on her way home when she gets a call from her bestie, Courtney, played by Christina Applegate. They're just checking in on each other's days. And Christina admits, "I don't really want to go out later. I just feel like staying home, getting a pizza and chilling."
Same girl, same.
Courtney hears a trolley bell in the background and asks, "What track are you on?" Christina says 3, and at the top of the hill, because she was coincidentally just around the corner, emerges Courtney. She throws her hands in the air and says cheerily, "Hey, Hoochie!" And they both shimmy toward each other and then walk together to Christina's quintessential San Francisco apartment. And when they're unlocking the door, they hear the song, "Cherish is the word I used to describe," playing in the background. It's Christina's roommate, Jane, played by Selma Blair, and this is her breakup jam. And she is on the couch, eating ice cream, bawling her eyes out because her boyfriend, Kevin, broke up with her 3 days before their one-year anniversary. Christina and Courtney console her and wipe away her tears, telling her she made herself too available. Jane holds up a self-help book, True Love, the Ten Commandments, and recites commandment number 4, "Thou shalt be open to love's possibilities. Boundaries are the enemies of love."
Any good friend would rip that book out of her friend's hand. Boundaries are not the enemy of love. They are how to maintain a healthy relationship, romantic or otherwise.
They didn't know that back in the early aughts, Kryn.
Okay, that's true. Because of all the romantic comedies that I watched, I thought that stalking the person that you were interested in was really the true way to show love.
Seriously.
And boy, was I ever misguided.
Yes. If you love them, you're going to be there all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Stalking equals love.
If they say no to you, what they really mean is yes.
Yes. And if they hit you, that just means they like you.
Oh, well, obviously. No, that's not what it means at all, gentle listeners.
Whew. The book is snatched rightfully out of Jane's hand, and her two friends tell her that boundaries are absolutely necessary in relationships, and she needs to protect herself. The pep talk doesn't seem to be working, so instead they inform her that they're going out clubbing, and she's coming with them. No excuses.
We next see the trio approaching a long line at a trendy hotspot. But wait, they don't have to wait in it because they're hotties. They get right in. Christina and Courtney hit the dance floor while Jane sits on a waterbed / seating area / maybe it's kind of an aquarium too. I don't know. It's an odd situation. It's in the middle of the dance floor. It just seems like a bad idea.
It looks very unsanitary.
Yeah.
You would have to disinfect that thing every night.
Well, you know, they didn't even bother with a sheet or anything on it. It was just the plastic, like, waterbed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I have no idea what's going on there. But once again, I reiterate, this is a fever dream of a movie. So, while the girls are shaking their stuff on the dance floor at Christina and Courtney, they get approached by two guys who try to dance with them, even resorting to surrounding the girls in a circle of love. They ring around the rosy those ladies while waving their arms around enthusiastically.
Thank you, Kryn, for that description, because I did not know how to describe it.
Oh, I was like, there's only really one term to use. Yeah, ring around the rosy. There you go. The ladies, shockingly, are not interested and politely conga line off the dance floor. Like, they're smooth, ditching the two guys. But their moves also caught another guy's eye. He's wearing a leather coat, which seems like a bad idea. This club seems full of bad ideas, though.
Yes, hard agree.
And he sends a waitress over with 2 martinis. She hands them to Christina and Courtney. Jane, no martinis for Jane.
I know, right? It's like she just got her heart broken. And, well, maybe he didn't know that she was with them because they were on the dance floor. Mm-hmm. Sans Jane. But I'd be pissed.
Yeah. If they were really close with Jane, like, I would have given her my martini. Just because I'd be like, you're the one with the broken heart. You deserve this. Here, drink. I'll get my own drink.
It's because you're a good friend. And you always, incidentally, give me your alcohol.
Well,
so,
you know.
Go figure.
I'm a giver.
Because you don't drink.
And I also don't drink. Yeah. But I mean, if it was like, say it was a chocolate milkshake and it was delivered to me, I'd be like, I love me some chocolate milkshake, but I'm going to check with Tam, who's had her heart broken, and see if she wants this chocolate milkshake.
I totally did not expect that. I thought you'd be like, from my cold, dead hands.
Well, my hands would be cold from holding the milkshake. That's true.
It's true. Fair.
So, Courtney, she's a-looking and she's a-liking what she sees in leather coat guy. So she yells, shotgun, and meanders towards the bar to get to know him. And let's take a moment to reenact the conversation between Leathercoat Guy and Courtney. It's very deep. Are you ready, Tam?
Sure.
What's up with you?
Nothing. 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 What's up with you?
Banner flirting. I need to write this shit down.
Isn't that how you won Larry's heart?
Absolutely.
Christina, who had been interested in Leather Coat Guy, comments to Jane that Courtney's a cheater. While Jane forlornly tells her, I'm having the best time. Christina's glad and asks, really? Jane admits bitterly, no, not really. I just got dumped. Nobody wants to talk to me and I just want to go home.
Same girl, same. Didn't that nightclub scene like give you a little twinge when you're like, oh, the 20s, when that seemed like such a good idea. And now it just looks like a no.
No.
Looks like a no.
Yeah. A hard no.
I would probably fall asleep on that waterbed and wake up with a rash on half my face.
I'd be like, where's the outdoor smoking area? I need to find that now, stat. Although the music was quiet enough in this club, I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't have bothered me.
The acoustics in this place was unbelievable because, well, we'll get into it, Corinne.
Christina pulls Jane off the waterbed chair bed thing and states, we're going to get you a guy. It's easy. They stand up on the dance floor and Christina immediately pinches the ass of a guy who is walking by. Consent, Christina, consent. That's what I say.
No, this was 2002. No, they did not know what consent was. I don't even think it was in the dictionary at this point.
You know what? I would agree with you. Consent. No means yes. Oh, okay. Great.
Oh, look, it's 2003 and they're doing the poll for what words to include in the Webster's Dictionary this year. Oh, the first one is consent and the second one is boundaries. Interesting.
Sadly, they got punted out and they didn't really get into the dictionary until about 2010 or so.
Yes, and even then, it took a while to catch on.
Yeah. This guy is rightfully offended at having his ass grabbed and confronts Christina, who ignores his question, asking, what's your name? He responds, Peter, who's played by Thomas Jane, and she pushes him towards our Jane, saying, this is my friend Jane, and she wants to dance. Peter says, hi, Jane. I don't mean to be rude, but I have some friends waiting for me. He turns to leave, and Jane's face falls. She mutters, he hated me. And Christina argues, he didn't hate you. That guy was just a dick. Peter's magically somehow still in earshot, even though they're supposed to be in a club where you can, like, you have to shout at people. Tamara, how would you say, like, the conversation level was in this club? How hard was it to hear people in this club?
It was, the acoustics were uncanny because you could hear everything, as well as the music in the background, which has never been my experience in a nightclub. Usually you're like, what? You think I stink? Oh, you want to get a drink? Yeah, let's do that. That's the conversation, the extent of it, because usually you get hoarse after 20 or 30 minutes.
Yeah. They're all speaking in just their normal tones of voices.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yes. I would 1,000% agree with that statement.
Yeah. But Peter, with the ears of a bat, turns around and confronts
the wonderful acoustics of this magic nightclub, Corinne.
It's magical. He confronts Christina, asking, how am I a dick? I didn't do anything to your friend. You tried to pawn me off on her, and you don't even know me. I could be a psycho serial killer. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Ba, 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 or something. Christina retorts, and Jane could be the girl of your dreams, but you'll never know. The guy scoffs. Oh, that is just the sweetest thing. I never knew I'd meet my dream girl by getting my ass grabbed at a bar. And bring the inspiration for the title of this movie.
Mm-hmm. There it is. There's the movie namesake.
Mm-hmm. Peter and Christina banter back and forth when Christina accuses him of playing it safe. And he calls her out on playing games with men. While they are arguing, Jane notices a very cute guy who waves her over, and she happily dances on over to the hottie, leaving Peter to end the discussion with Christina with a curt, "Nice manners, by the way," and he leaves in a huff.
In a huff. A little later, Christina and Courtney have a meeting in the ladies' room. Mm. They'll be back real soon.
Oh, yeah.
Christina regales her friend with the altercation with Peter and how he called her out on her shit. Courtney knows her friend and gasps, "Oh, you like this guy." Christina denies it until Courtney points out, "You named the puppy and you're getting all bajiggity." Christina argues, "She's not getting bajiggity." A fellow bathroom patron stares dumbfounded at Courtney's ample chest and Courtney calls over, "They're fake." And the girl apologizes profusely for staring. Courtney's unfazed and tells the girl, "That's why I got him. You can touch him if you want." The girl does, and while the friends continue arguing over the fact that Christina likes Peter, a few other ladies join in on the feeling Courtney's chest up, commenting, "They're so soft, I need to get me a pair." The bathroom door swings open, and two guys that are passing by see the grope-a-thon and practically fall over themselves to get a better look.
Yeah, this is like
one of them says,
written by, I don't know, a 10-year-old boy or something like that. This movie has so many moments like this where I'm just like, really? Really? These guys being like, "Ooga, look, there's women in the restroom having their boobies groped."
Or could it be the male gaze and taking it back, how they want to see women in a certain light, and oftentimes it's not even remotely what they think.
Sure. Way to elevate this movie, Tam.
Are the women getting groped up in the bathroom because they're so hot and bothered, or does somebody just want to touch a pair of fake tits to see what they feel like, with nothing sexual going on at all?
Or little column A and column B, you know.
Yeah. No, I don't think none of those ladies were getting turned on by cupping Courtney's tits.
No, but the guys were getting turned on by the women cupping Courtney's tits.
They were. And they were still there hunkering down by the door when Christina exits. She knocks the two over, who fall into Peter, who happens to be walking by again. His drink flies out of his hand and Christina stops dead in her tracks when she realizes it's him again.
Ooh.
She smiles at him. She smiles. He smiles. They smile. As Courtney comes out of the bathroom, sees the goofy look on her friend's face and smirks knowingly, saying, "Hey, Peter." Then we cut to Christina at the bar getting Peter a replacement drink for the one she knocked out of his hands. He apologizes, finally, for being rude to Jane, and she apologizes for calling him a dick and wonders how the hell he hurt her. They didn't. He didn't. But they do make amends, and Peter admits that he should be getting back to his friends. Christina does look a little bajiggity as he walks away.
Okay, bajiggity? I remember you used to say this word so much.
I said bajiggity because of this movie. Bajiggity, bajiggity, bajiggity. It's even fun to say.
This movie is such a time capsule of early 2000s. It's incredible. Oh. This movie is incredibly dated. Just this incredible capture of so much stylistically, etc., of the early 2000s.
I happily agree with that. And maybe that's why I'm so fond of it, because it's like a snapshot in time and I can clearly go back in there and be like, yes, that was a bajiggity time.
It was a bajiggity time.
Christina sadly hands her drink to a waitress saying, "Can you take this? Oh, I just so struck out with this guy." When Peter excitedly rushes back and exclaims, "Hey, one more thing. Should I be upset that my ex-girlfriend has her tongue down another guy's throat?" He points Jane out in the corner where she is practically licking the new guy's face, and Christina squeals in triumph and Peter chokes. "I guess that could have been me if I wasn't such a dick. Maybe we should start over. I'll pass by and you grab my ass again." Christina argues, "I pinched your ass. I don't grab. That's not my style." Across the club, Peter's brother hollers, and they magically hear it because the acoustics in this place are great. He pushes his way over to them. He's loud, obnoxious, a chauvinist named Roger, who's played by
Jason Bateman.
Thank you.
who this movie was in 2002. So before he had his second resurgence in 2003 from Arrested Development.
Yes.
In popularity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although he was peppering his talent all over these little flicks and showing his chops, because I think Jason Bateman played Roger beautifully.
Oh, Jason Bateman plays Smarmy McSmarmington.
Yes.
Impeccably. Yes. Well. Yes.
Chef's kiss. Mm-hmm. Jason Bateman. Have you seen him in Bad Words?
Do you think that I watched the movie Bad Words unless it was going to be on our podcast? Come
Guess
on.
Not. Guess I'm going to have to add that to the roster.
You love me. You really love me.
That's the only way I'm going to get you to see it. You never take my recommendations. I'm like, oh, you don't want to see it? You think it'll be disturbing? Guess what? It's going to be in April, our April lineup. You're welcome.
That is not true. I do take your recommendations.
Okay.
I watched Maid because of you.
Oh, what'd you think of it?
It was great. I loved it. Yeah.
Roger's trying to rope drunk girls into an after-hours party until one projectile vomits all over him. Mm, good girl.
Sexy.
He sees the hotness of Christina and tells Peter, fuck me, who's this? Invite her. As a replacement for the vomit girl, Peter's apprehensive, but his brother insists. He grabs Peter's cheek and tells Christina, you'll never meet another guy like my brother. Chicks go wild for him. He's the greatest. And he's in my wedding this Saturday. We figure out that this must be the bachelor party. And Peter tells her the wedding is Saturday afternoon in Somerset when she asks. And also invites her to the after-hours party and hopes that she can come. But he says it in a non-creepy way, unlike his brother. Christina says, okay, I'll ask my friends. And the two share a lingering look as he says, I hope you can come, but if not, have a nice life.
Oh, but she doesn't go to the party. She goes home. Alone, alone, alone. Courtney left with leather jacket guy and leaves her bestie a few choice messages on her answering machine. Hey, Christina, if you're listening to this, that means you didn't go to the party and hook up with Peter, which makes you a loser. Beep. She clicks to the next message, only to hear, my name is Christina and I'm a loser. Beep. Christina laughs, contemplates going, but winds up falling asleep on the couch, where she has an intense, intense dream about Peter.
Oh.
In it, he's a cunnilingus god who wants to go down on her on the hour, every hour.
That just sounds like a whole lot of discomfort to me. I don't know about you, but that's too much.
Nope. Not interested. Sounds like a lot of chafing. No.
Sounds like a lot of moisture.
I enjoy a good bed dance. I enjoy good, you know, romp. But every hour on the hour,
yeah,
back away from me with that mouth. No, thank you.
Veto. I'm going to start wearing a chastity belt and you better honor it, goddammit. Can you imagine that if you did have a boyfriend that was so just like that was his kink that he just wanted to eat you out all the time and you had to like run away from him as he chased you around going, but I love you.
Well, a guy broke up with me because it was his kink. So, you know.
Oh my God, yeah. You poor thing. How did you handle it?
I responded very maturely, much like in the kissing booth when she says that her boobs are really great. I was like, and my pussy tastes awesome, is what I said to him.
Did he want to do it on the hour and every hour? Did you get like bed sores down there from
like,
work he was doing?
I was like,
that's gross. Ew.
I was like,
gross myself out.
Back away, back away, back away. Yeah.
Thwacking him with the back of your hand. I said no.
Yeah. Not only is Peter a every hour on the hour cunnilingus god, though, Tamara, he also insists that men don't like blowies.
I made Larry watch this movie with me, and he spoke on two parts. What? Three parts. First was you not remembering his name. The second, I'm just kidding. The second was him saying, that's not how a nightclub works. And the third was him going, who doesn't like blowjobs?
And I say, you know, there may be a few men who don't like blowjobs, but I would say, like, overarching apparently men enjoy blowjobs.
And if they don't, then I'm going to take a page from the Book of Man and say, well, maybe it's because you just haven't had somebody do it to you right.
Oh, okay. Miss Blowy Aficionado.
Yes, no, don't, no qualms. I am not volunteering myself to try to be that person that changes your mind. I'm just saying I have heard that before from guys' yes. mouths, and I am therefore flipping the script and saying it to Senor No Blowy-like guy.
You are once again elevating this movie, reclaiming the female gaze. I get it. I get it. And then Peter's final power, which is the power that I really care about. And I think that you may value as well, Tam. He has the power to take calories out of ice cream.
That's amazing. I would love to have a dream like that. The other stuff, no. The calories out of ice cream, yes, please.
I don't care if the ice cream has calories. I just want it to be deliciously tasting like chocolate ice cream. And also encompassed within that is all the balanced nutritional value of like regular food.
Oh, easy peasy. I'm sure. Can somebody out there get on that right away? I'm just surprised they haven't done it yet.
So he orders his calorie-free but delicious ice cream for Christina. And she munches happily away on a giant bowl of ice cream while he munches happily away on her. But when she wakes up, in reality, she immediately regrets not going to the after hours party because she wishes that she could have gotten action like that in real life and tries calling the hotel, the Four Seasons.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Mm. That Peter said they were staying at. Oh, and what room were they staying at in again, Tam?
They were staying at the Freddie Mercury suite.
Ooh, yeah, that's not going to be expensive at all. And, you know, I imagine in the Freddie Mercury suite, there is a life-size wax figure of Freddie Mercury, and there's a button that you can press, and he sings, "Fat bottom girls, you make my rocking world go round."
I think that is way too literal, and it'd be more subtly Mr. Mercury and decorated in leather and cat motifs.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Literal? Yeah, you could call it literal, or you could just call it entertaining, just like Freddie Mercury.
Just go to the Four Seasons and answer this question right now. You work in San Francisco. You go to the Four Seasons, Corinne, and you ask to see the Freddie Mercury suite and report back to us.
Uh-huh. And they say Freddie Mercury suite.
Why, that hasn't been here since 2007.
They've been like, you've been watching The Sweetest Thing, haven't you?
Yes, everybody comes in.
Did you know that it reclaims the female gaze? Oh, really? You don't say. Sadly, the hotel informs her that the party has already checked out. So it appears Christina missed her chance. Womp, 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 womp. The next day, the three friends meet for lunch in Chinatown. Okay, what? There's like,
what do you mean?
A dragon it's dancer cultural going representation. By.
Cultural representation.
Yeah, yeah. A mini Chinese New Year in the middle of summer party goes by. It's kind of incredible.
Do you think this couldn't have happened during the Chinese New Year?
No, that's in February. This is like, they're in like summer time.
Oh, well, you would know. You do work there. So, I could see. Yep.
Jane says to Christina and Courtney, you two go ahead. Go to the restaurant. I will meet you there. I just need to drop by the dry cleaner real quick, like. And Courtney recognizes the dress that she lent her friend the night before and asks, what's on it? Jane feigns ignorance. Nothing's on the dress. It's totally cool. I'm just being a good friend, taking it to the dry cleaner. And Courtney and Christina, being good friends, snatch the dress away from her and notice a gigantic cum stain on the front of it. Huh. It's crusty. It's basically like somebody snotted all over it. It's gross.
With the very runny nose.
Yes. They playfully call her a slut in front of the crowded street, and she replies that you both suck. To which they wave the dress around and call out triumphantly, no, obviously you're the one that sucks. Apparently, her boyfriend is the one guy who actually does like blowies. The next scene, Tamara claims, is very funny, but irrelevant to the storyline.
It's very funny. I stand by that.
I wouldn't have included it if I had been writing the script. I just would have skipped over it entirely. However, because I am a good friend and I love Tamara, I will read this just for her.
And because she's controlling the narrative this week. Read my words. Read my words.
But I will do it in pig Latin. Angel, extend.
No, I'm just kidding.
Jane takes the dress to her neighborhood dry cleaner, Mr. Martin. He demands to know what the stain is to help better remove it. She argues that she doesn't know what the mystery stain is, as a third grade field trip, complete with her third grade teacher that she hasn't seen in years, and her family pastor all come into the cleaners, much to Jane's horror. But no, they just add like icing on top of the whole situation, because as she's trying to be super cool while Mr. Martin scratches, sniffs, and licks the stain. Ugh. I am horrified, and I would have left much earlier than she did, but Tamara is too busy laughing her pants off to notice.
No, I feel this so hard. This is like equivalent to having somebody that you know and respect walk in while you're trying to buy condoms at 16 years old.
But fortunately, we cut away from that scene. At the restaurant, Courtney is giving Christina shit for not... Hey!
It's our second recording. I get it.
Yes.
I get it. So, you didn't have a nap today. I didn't press record.
Recording
that's why I'm laughing, 'cause that's
Electric Boogaloo.
Sorry. Yawn if you need to.
At the restaurant, Courtney is giving Christina shit for not going to the party. Christina admits she tried calling the hotel, and Court is intrigued. But her friend squelches her expectations because they already checked out. Courtney eyes her friend carefully and says, let's sum this up. In the bathroom, we hate him, but we call him by name. Then you throw beer on him, flirt and laugh, and then call his hotel, then obsess about the call. Courtney thinks Christina really likes him, but Christina assures her friend, no, I'm not obsessing. No, she has zero regrets. And besides, there's nothing she can do about it now. Court agrees to drop the subject, but Christina lingers on one last thought. But if I did want to do something, I could go to Somerset and show up at his brother's wedding. But that's if I regret it, which I don't. No, I'm cool. I'm cool, 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 cool. Courtney scoffs and peers contemplatively at her best friend behind her menu, eyeing her with the eyes.
See, but I did cut out the driving range scene. See, I do cut stuff out that's also funny, because they have a very entertaining lightsaber fight, Peter and his brother Roger.
Which doesn't make me feel awkward at all, unlike the come licking dry cleaner.
That's what it is. I'm like, what is going to make Corinne cringe? Yep, we're leaving this in. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
We're not leaving in the fun lightsaber fight on a golf course or at a driving range. No, no.
No, no.
We need to lick some cum.
Yes.
We're leaving the licking cum in.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Tam.
No problem. That's what I'm here for. Really letting you expand your horizons.
Uh-huh.
And next we see Saturday morning, where Christine is asleep at home and her wonderful bestie, Courtney, channels her inner bratty little sister and does the old put toothpaste on friend's finger and tickle their nose trick. Christina scratches her face and inadvertently smears toothpaste all over her nose, chin, and forehead. And when she wakes up, she's annoyed at the prank. But Courtney smugly tells her, you're minty fresh now. Get up, I need to borrow your black Gucci bag. Christina begrudgingly heads to the living room with her friend in tow, but they are blocked in the hallway by The haughty guy Jane was looking at the club. Mm. I believe his name is Todd. That's what he's listed at in IMDb, but I don't think anyone ever says his name. And maybe we want to name him something else, Corinne? He doesn't look like a Todd. What do you think?
Frank. I'm thinking Frank. Yeah.
He is a Frank. Yeah. Frank. Frank with the Frank.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He's very surprised to see the two and has nothing but a small towel covering his Frank. Mm. When he asks where the bathroom is, they point the way and the towel accidentally falls, giving them a front view of his junk. And he hurries away as the friends chuckle and declare, "Oh my cock, oh my cock," to each other.
But I'm just looking at his ass because it is very round, well sculpted, beautiful. Yes.
See, now, if Corinne were outlining this movie, she would probably spend a good 2 to 3 sentences on the shape and curve of Frank/Todd's ass.
Oh, I was thinking a third of the outline. You know, just keep it real simple and straightforward, right?
Mm-hmm. But paint a picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the living room, they find Jane there clad in only her underwear, holding her sore coochie because they were getting it on probably all night, and congratulate her on making out with the hottie. Christina hands Courtney the purse while getting comfy on the couch and asks her friend, "So where are you going?" And Courtney responds, "You and I are going to a wedding." Christina doesn't know anyone who's getting married, and her friend informs her that they are driving to Somerset to go to Peter's brother's wedding. It's a ridiculously small town 3 hours north, so they got to get moving. Christina doesn't budge and informs her friend, "I was just joking when I said that." And Courtney bends down so they're face to face and says slowly, 50% of what people say when they're joking is true. You do want to go to this wedding, and by joking about it, you can say what you really want without being vulnerable.
Mm, such wisdom of the ages.
I think I regurgitated this little bit to many people in many different times in my life, much like Bajiggity.
And I see you giving me the eyes. I know I joke around about a lot of things. I do not want to have this being rehashed back to me, because when I'm joking, I'm just joking.
Sure, Corinne. Uh-huh. That's why I was looking at you pointedly while I read that whole sentence. Uh-huh. And then, "You're going to be joking." I'm going to say that line back to you, and I'm just going to be like, okay, it may not be 50%, Corinne. It may be like maybe more on the 10% line or the 60%. I'm just going to move my hand up and down, and you tell me when to stop.
And I'm going to
because there's an element of truth in there, and I know it.
And I'm going to say, "Look, I got some garlic stuffed olives."
Try to thwart me with your olives?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Her friend, much like Corinne will when I tell her this next time, realizes she's right.
Ooh.
And only hesitates a moment before excitedly rushing to get ready. They get on the road and Courtney balances a map on her steering wheel to figure out their route. Christina gets a whiff of something stanky in the car and Courtney can't smell it while her friend squeals, "Ew, that's because you're used to it. It smells like moldy ass in here." Courtney smirks and says sarcastically, "Oh, as a matter of fact, I did leave some ass back there. That's probably what you're smelling."
Does that car remind you of anyone's car, Tamara?
It sure does. And her name rhymes with Marin. But we should save that to the end because I want to have a little man in the mirror scene where we figure out who's more of a Christina and who's more of a Courtney between the two of us.
Okay.
I'm starting to see the checks going off in the Corinne's more of a Courtney department after this scene.
Oh.
I mean Marin, whoever that is. Christina climbs into the very cluttered backseat to investigate, and while her backside is waving right next to her friend's face, Courtney sniffs and asks, "Could it be you? Did something crawl up your punani?" Christina confronts her friend, arguing, "I have never had any complaints in the punani odor department."
Punani, another early 2000s word.
Yes. But jiggity punanis all over the place. That was my lingo.
Mm-hmm.
I absorbed this movie so hard. The wisdom, the words, the sweetest thing. Courtney counters, "Well, neither have I," and they high-five on the clean punani. But since it's not their punani that smells, Christina dives back into the piles of trash to track the stink. She picks up a to-go foil-wrapped swan-shaped doggy bag and gags. Ugh. Courtney doesn't even recognize the item, and it's probably because it's been in her car so long that maggots are crawling all over a pile of rotted, unrecognizable food. Christina sees them, shrieks, and chucks the foul package out the window, while Courtney yells, "That's not okay! That is not okay!" Stinky crisis averted, or is it? The friends continue on their way, but that, unfortunately, is not the end of the maggoty package. Find out why with us after the break.
Back. It's not over because the foil-wrapped stink bomb happens to be in the shape of a swan, which catches air outside and somehow circles back and splats, maggots and all, onto the car windshield, causing the friends to shriek in horror, as I would be. But they get immediate karmic payback for littering, so go, universe, go! The girls, disgusted, go to the nearest gas station where an attendant squeegees the mess off the windshield. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that you can't find that now. Some attendant squeegeeing off your windshield unless you live in Oregon.
How far north did they go exactly? They said they went north from San Francisco. They wouldn't be in Oregon, right?
No,
they wouldn't be in Oregon yet.
No, they're... As far as I can tell, they're near Tahoe. I looked it up on the map. There is actually a place called Somerset, but it's very, very small. It's not quite like this super cute town that they go into. It's unincorporated. So, yeah, basically tumbleweeds are going through it. The girls find a bathroom. The women's restroom is occupied by a lady who advises them to look elsewhere because she's shitting a Buick and will be there a while. So they slink into a disgusting-looking men's restroom.
Do you think she sent her bestie a picture of that Buick-shaped shit? Like some people in my life would...
Who's sending you pictures of shit?
No, not sending. Maybe just a description, like Jabba the Hutt.
I wouldn't know anything about that. That doesn't sound like class act like me that would do something like that.
Scroll. Shit, something you look like Jabba the Hutt. I said, I feel so close to you right now. And you said, unlike my butt cheeks that have never been further apart. I've never been as far apart. I wish this on no one.
It might sound vaguely familiar. I don't Might have happened this weekend. I don't know. But this woman is not shitting Jabba the Hutt. She's shitting a Buick. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds way more painful.
So Christina and Courtney slink into the disgusting looking men's room and find it empty, or so they think. So Christina takes a stall and Courtney hovers over the urinal to pee. I don't know how that's working out for her. There's plenty of art on the restroom wall to keep Christina occupied, and she reads Courtney a poem that's scrawled upon it. And once again, Tam just has me rereading things, the gift that keeps on giving. There once was a man from Bandu who fell asleep on a canoe. He dreamt of Venus and played with his penis and woke up with a handful of goo. Blah, 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 blah. No.
Poetry. Sheer poetry.
This makes Courtney laugh so hard, like Tamara. She pees herself a little. Next to the poem on the bathroom wall is a yellow brick road, not of pee, though, that snakes around the stall and leads to a cute painting of a puppy with a hole where the mouth is. Christina is tickled because it looks just like her old dog Puffy, and there appears to be something in the dog's mouth. She inches closer to get a better look while Courtney attempts to flush the urinal. The handle is stuck, so she has to push down harder and harder until the pipes crack and water shoots out and slams Courtney against the wall and soaks her. Meanwhile, Christina, who obviously has never heard of a glory hole, gets poked in the eye with a fucking dick and stumbles out, clutching her face in disgust. She doesn't see Courtney, who's trying to get her footing, and they both fall on the ground of the stanky-ass bathroom, which you know that flooring clean, and get drenched by urinal pipe water, otherwise known as water.
It's not there. It was connected to a urinal. The urinal flew off the wall. Therefore, there is some urinal urine water in there as well.
Well,
I argue my point.
I say that there's urine mixed in regardless because of that floor.
Ew, yeah, you're probably right.
The pair swiftly retreats to a swing set to dry off as one does. Courtney laughs maniacally because she thinks what just occurred is hilarious. Tamara. She asks, how can you not know what a glory hole is? While Christina squirts copious amounts of eyewash in her dick dye. That's such a good line. Banner writing Tam. And says, well, unlike my whore friend Courtney Rockcliffe, I don't usually spend a lot of time in men's bathrooms. Can you please have some compassion? Courtney finally stops laughing long enough to take a close look at her friend's eye. And after a short examination, she says quietly, you're okay, but I think you're pregnant. Christina, in retaliation, squirts her eyewash bottle all over her friend while Courtney begins gleefully laughing again. And if you're wondering why Jane didn't accompany the ladies on this road trip, we find out in the next scene. She's working at a high-end men's boutique. The owner is away sailing with his boy toy, so Jane is in charge and easily bosses around her coworker, who wants to take it easy.
But that's not going to happen on Jane's watch. She orders her coworker to take inventory of the stockroom and begins straightening some ties on a table when a giant purple elephant tiptoes up behind her. The elephant huskily says, there's my dirty girl. Ugh. And Jane, taken by surprise, begins punching the elephant in the face,
yay,
who quickly removes his head to reveal haughty Mr. Oh My Cock Guy Todd /
Frank.
Thank you. I was gonna call him Peter. I was like, that's not right. There's already so many Peters in the world right now. We don't need another one. He explains that he works at a children's hospital, hence the costume, and Jane is immediately charmed. She starts kissing him and admits, I'm horny. He is too, so she takes him up the stairs towards the dressing room, and we get a very entertaining shot of Jane riding a big purple elephant.
What is it though?
Maybe I didn't enjoy it as much in the movie, but then when they do the outtakes and they're like bouncing around simulating the sex scene and she keeps getting whacked by the purple nose.
No, that I enjoyed the outtake of it. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So every time I see the outtake or when I see the intake, it reminds me of the outtake. So I still think it's entertaining. But sadly, Jane's not entertained because Todd won't stop talking about how great they are together and they fit together so well. She irritatedly finally takes his purple elephant head and pushes it back onto his face so she can concentrate. But little does she know that downstairs, the boutique owner has showed up and is asking where Jane is. Her coworker runs to find her while the boss exclaims irritatedly, I leave for one day and this place turns into Indonesia. And I only left that in because I don't know what the fuck that means. Was it something from the early aughts?
Pretty sure it's racist is what I think it is.
Well, it was from the early aughts. So yeah, yes. That's probably right. Yeah. Meanwhile, miles away, Courtney and Christina have found a hidden grove of trees away from the road and decide to strip off their urinal-soaked clothes. Mm. And autocorrect kept wanting to make that urine-soaked clothes, but I fought it. I fought it.
I say a little column A and a little column B.
No, well, fair. Christina sheepishly tells her friend before pulling down her pants, remember how I said it was laundry day? Well, the only underwear I had were these skanky things. She strips to reveal a saggy pair of cotton briefs with faded flowers. It looked like something I would have worn when I was 5.
Same.
And Courtney nods, no, right? Courtney nods knowingly and pulls up her own dress to reveal a misshapen pair of men's boxer briefs. It was her laundry day, too.
And Christina is wearing a bikini top.
I think that Courtney is too, because hers is like pink with like big sparkles on it. It looks like something you wear to the beach.
Or if you're like going to be in concert singing or something like that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like Selena Quintanilla. Exactly. She's like a bustier.
Exactly.
A song comes on the radio and Christina points to her friend dramatically and reminds her, spring break in 1994. It's the Pina Colada song, a.k.a. Escape, that nobody calls it that.
And a.k.a. the cheater song is what I call it.
That is so fitting. So fitting.
I never knew it was called Escape.
Yeah, most people don't.
The more you know. Bling. Thank you for that learning moment, Tamara. I appreciate it.
No problem. I also did not think of it as a cheating song, but now that also will stick in my head every time I hear it. And what does it sound like? If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain. The friends continue stripping and sing to each other and dance to If You're Not Into Yoga, If You Have Half a Brain. The brain line reminds the ladies of Jane. Brain Jane! She was also at Spring Break 1994, so they decide to call her at work. Jane has managed to unmount herself from the purple elephant and successfully sneak him out the door without anybody seeing or knowing that she was just participating in one half of a furry fantasy.
Which is magic down in and of itself.
I know, right? I didn't want to get into it because I'm like, this so did not happen. But we're you know what? What do they say? You have to kind of accept a little bit of fantasy when you're watching rom-coms. And that's what happened in this scene.
This movie, you have to accept a lot of fantasy. I'm surprised a dragon didn't come along and whisk anyone away.
Well, there was a purple stuffed elephant, so there's that.
Yeah.
She hurries downstairs with her coworker to face her disgruntled boss just as the phone rings. The boss picks it up and a comical voice on the other end asks, "Can I speak to Jane, please?" He hands the phone to her and the voice says, "Have a lovely day." As Jane takes the phone to her ear, her boss presses a speaker button so they can all hear Courtney and Christina gleefully shout, "Jane, Jenny, Jenny!" into the phone. Jane sheepishly tells her friends, "I can't talk right now, I'm really busy." But the duo ask, wait, before you go. And they both shout enthusiastically into the phone, "Do you like pina coladas?" before they get hung up on.
Ah, good friends. So Christina and Courtney head back on the road again. They are on a lonely stretch of highway somewhere up in Northern California, and now they're both clad in only their underwear. They're doing some last-minute wedding prep, as one does in your underwear as you drive in your car to a wedding.
Well, if you're in the car for 3 hours,
I know.
You've got to find something to pass the time.
We have banner conversations, so.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Christina is painting her toenails on the dashboard and Courtney is applying lip gloss in the rearview mirror, but she accidentally drops the bottom half of the lip gloss onto the floor and asks Christina to get it for her. Christina obliges and has her ass up in the air in full view of the passenger window and her head seemingly in Courtney's lap. Arrrr. A biker in leather gear pulls up alongside them. He mistakenly thinks he happened across a couple of lesbians that could not control their passions and had to perform cunnilingus while driving. Nothing awkward about that at all. No.
Or uncomfortable. Or complicated.
Yeah.
Or dangerous.
The amount of spreading that would have to you would at minimum need cruise control.
The gas pedal would have to be on this side, and the brake pedal would have to be way over on the passenger side for that to work.
Yeah. Courtney sees the biker practically drooling alongside them and decides to fuck with the guy and play into his fantasy. She's reclaiming the female gaze from the super feminist movie.
Did not write that.
She pretends to rub the back of Christina's head and mouths, "Oh yeah, you like that?" The guy gets more and more riled up and Courtney gets more and more raunchy. She gyrates her pelvis, swings her arm around and says, "Don't stop! Don't stop!" Christina is oblivious when she hears this and assures her friend, "I'm not going to stop." She's going to get that motherfucking lip gloss for her. Damn it. The biker is yipping at this point and is so mesmerized by the scene that he doesn't see a road closed sign and plows right into it. Christina, none the wiser, emerges with the lip gloss bottom and Courtney is shook. Christina asks her friend if she's okay, and once Courtney looks in the rearview mirror and sees the biker guy jump up and throw his hands in the air, she says to her friend, "Yeah, totally fine. Nothing to see here." The ladies continue on their way and try to work out a game plan for when they get to the wedding. They make up a really complicated backstory. Are you ready?
Wait.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm ready.
Courtney went to college with the bride. And with that plan in place, they just need new clothes.
Genius!
Yes. They finally arrive at Somerset, a quaint little town, complete with horse-drawn carriage. The ladies park, cover their bottom halves with unfolded maps, and hurry over to a women's boutique called Vera's House of Beauty. They are only in there for a few moments before they realize this boutique is stuck in the 80s. There's sequins, gold lamé, shoulder pads, and one of our favorites here at ODK, bow dresses everywhere! The bigger the bows, the better! The friends realize that they're not going to find anything and try to leave when a sweet lady appears as if by magic behind the counter and asks, "Can I help you find something?" The ladies try to be polite and say, "We're just leaving. We're looking for something very specific." But this is Vera. They're in her house of beauty, and she's not fooled. She says quietly, "You don't like my store, do you?" The ladies deny it and continue heading towards the door until Vera informs them that the next dress shop is 20 miles away. The ladies realize they don't have time to find another shop if they want to make it to the wedding. And it is at this point where we realize that only one half of the conversation of our podcast was recorded and we started over again.
Fuck. God. Oh. No, see, we don't want them to know where we stopped and re-recorded, so everything seems spontaneous up until this point.
Of course it's spontaneous. The words of spontaneity that flow from our mouths are amazing.
I know, sadly, we couldn't include or recreate when Corinne called LeMay lame and we had a back and forth conversation about me being too lazy to find the little thing that goes over the E.
The accent mark.
Yes. And Corinne assuring me that she knew it was LeMay the second the words escaped her mouth.
Yes, I did. Courtney and Christina resign themselves to making do with the House of Beauty offerings. The friends go to the fitting room, criticize the non-existent problems they see with their bodies when Vera schleps a stack of dresses through the curtains. They are special.
So special.
And the girls decide to do a movie montage with them because there's always time for a movie montage. But this is not just any movie montage. This is a movie montage of fever dreams. This is a movie montage of drugs. The person who wrote this was doing something because I can't even. The ladies parody Dumb and Dumber, Pretty Women, Grease, Madonna, and Flashdance, all with matching hairdos, like completely transformed. It's pretty epic, as in Madonna is magically making Jennifer Beals' Flashdance disappear multiple times by wiggling her fingers. Boop, she's gone. Boop, she reappears. What? I don't even know how this is happening. It's very surreal, but by the end, they're BFFs with Vera and hug her after they check out. Before she leaves, Vera asks Courtney if she'd like to be on their mailing list. And Courtney smiles mischievously and jots something down that makes Vera say, "Oh, that's sweet." But we don't see what it says.
The pair rush out to their car in hot pink and electric blue dresses with gaudy matching fascinators. Christina gets a glimpse of a reflection in the car window and guffaws at the sight of them. She pulls Courtney close and says stoically, "These are the days of our lives." As an homage to the 80s soap opera that they look like they just stepped out of.
And I just need to add, Days of Our Lives started in 1965 and is still going on to this very day.
You're kidding.
Nope.
Wow, I didn't think that one was still on. I used to watch All My Children. My summer breaks in high school. That's, I don't think, around anymore.
I watched General Hospital and Passions and Days of Our Lives. Yeah.
It just got so frustrating because you watch it one week and somebody's in a coma and then 2.5 weeks later, they're still in a coma.
Yeah.
Because time moves maniacally slow in soap opera world.
It does.
But that might be why these ladies are still in the 80s. Because so is Vera's House of Beauty.
I know. Their outfits are definitely from that time era.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Christina is livid and tells Courtney, "This is not discreet. I just want to go home." She walks over to a bus bench and slumps on it. And Courtney's a little miffed and says, "Fine. I mean, we only drove 3 hours." Her friend argues, "This is crazy." And Courtney agrees, "I know, I know. If there was only a sign from God that you and this Peter Donahue should be together." Christina asks, confused, "Donahue? How do you know his last name is Donahue?" Her bestie smirks and admits, "'Cause you're sitting on his face."
Ooh.
Christina turns around to see a bus bench ad for Peter Donahue, real estate agent, where everything he touches turns to sold.
Ooh.
Christina is enamored and gushes, "How cute is he?" And if her buns on his ad weren't a big enough sign, they hear church bells off in the distance. Christina's conviction is renewed, and they run towards the bells, towards the bells! They get there just as people are taking their seats and try to decide which side to sit on when Christina whispers, "I gotta pee." Courtney's annoyed and asks, "Did you misplace your bladder today? But when you gotta go, you gotta go." Mm-hmm. So Christina hurries outside to find the only restroom while Courtney grabs them seats. Unfortunately, that closest restroom is in the bridal dressing suite, and Christina barges through the lavatory door. She finds the bride, who's fully dressed in her wedding gown, sitting on the toilet, hyperventilating into a paper bag. She's having serious cold feet about getting married, and Christina masterfully talks her off the ledge by saying, "You look beautiful, and if the marriage doesn't work, you can always get divorced."
Hmm.
This seems to calm the bride's nerves, and she leaves the suite with her father to walk down the aisle, thanks to her new friend.
And the bride is played by Parker Posey.
It is powerhouse cast in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The bridal march starts, and Courtney sneaks out to find her still absent friend who never got back from the bathroom. Little does she know that when Christina tried to leave the bridal dressing room, the knob on the very old door fell off and she got locked in.
Oof.
Christina has to resort to climbing out the window and falls face first onto the ground because she can't bend her legs and wear a super tight dress. Courtney spots her, and once she ensures that her friend is fine, they sneak back into the church. The priest has already started the ceremony as the girls scramble to find an unlocked side door and quietly find seats. In the background, they hear, "We are here today to rejoice in the holy matrimony of Judith Catherine Webb and Peter Donahue." Peter Donahue? Everything he touches turns to sold Peter Donahue? This last bit causes Christina to attempt to spin around, but the skirt thwarts her again and she falls to the ground, taking a huge flower arrangement with her. This gets the attention of the bridal party and all the pews full of guests. They all stare at Courtney, who's still standing and attempts to cover the interruption by saying, "Oh, this isn't the Glickman bar mitzvah, is it, Moisha? Moisha here? No? Okay." Just then, Christina pops up and says, "Come on, Vera, let's go." And they quickly exit, calling Mazel Tov over their shoulders.
And one of their dads says, "There's no Jewish people in this town." And I'm like, oh, the racist jokes just keep on coming.
No, he actually says, "That's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. There's no Jews in this town."
Uh-huh.
And if they were Jews, why would they be in a church and not a temple? I'm just saying. The Glickman bar mitzvah is in a church? I don't think so. Peter and his brother both recognize Christina right away, but continue with the ceremony. The priest goes on with the vows as Judith, the bride, starts getting redder and redder until she's almost completely covered in hives. She whispers to Peter, "Peter, I'm having reservations." And he's surprised, but admits that he is too. They both agree in front of the altar, their family and friends, that they don't want to go through with the marriage. And they kiss, much to the priest's dismay, as he argues, "I haven't got to that part yet." But they don't care. Peter and Judith triumphantly hold up their clasped hands in front of everybody and proclaim happily, "We're not getting married!" The guests clap uneasily as the bride informs the church, "But we're still having a party, so if everybody wants to go to the back of the room, to the ceremony space." And while she's saying this, her dad tackles Peter because, in his eyes, it's all his fault. Even though he was standing right there and heard the whole conversation, but whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Christina and Courtney head back home in defeat. They stop at a gas station, and as they fill the tank, Christina, in a stupor, asks, "Refresh my memory, was that Peter's wedding we walked in on?" Courtney nods and Christina chastises herself for getting so caught up in a guy who wasn't anything special. Courtney theorizes, you know what? I think you're tired of the game and looking for someone special. They look at each other knowingly and Christina asks, you getting tired of the game? And Courtney quietly answers, yep. I'm tired of the game, but guess what? Sadly, I haven't been able to find somebody who wants to play long term with me that is acceptable. Meanwhile, at the non-wedding party, chauvinistic brother Roger sings a horrible, horrible rendition of Eternal Flame, our bestie song.
I said banger. Banger rendition. You mispronounced banger.
You did say banger, and I banger to differ. Close your eyes. Give me your hand, darling. Yeah, that's just banger right there.
But it's our song and it needs to be acknowledged.
Well, yeah, absolutely. We cannot pass by an Eternal Flame moment. Please.
It burns eternally, for God's sake.
Obviously. Like our friendship.
And your lips after you've had them licked every hour on the hour by boyfriend that loves cunnilingus.
Nope. Judith admits to Peter that she met someone else online. And Peter gets tackled yet again by the bride's father, who is enraged even though he has clearly heard both sides of the conversation, wherein Judith admits that she has had an emotional affair at minimum with somebody else.
And also is the one who initially called off the wedding.
And is also says within her dad's ear range that she is going to sell their honeymoon tickets and go to Bali and scuba dive instead.
She must be daddy's girl.
Gotta be. He blames Peter 1,000% for the breakup. Back in San Francisco, Courtney and Christina finally arrive home and come upon something out of a fever dream. Shocker. Fuck all.
I said fever dream first.
This entire movie is practically a fever dream. There's a cop outside their apartment that's visibly shaken. He informs them there's an atrocious scene in their apartment that he's never seen the likes of in his 20 years on the force. Is it a murder?
Nope. Yes again.
Neglected children.
Nope.
They immediately think the worst and rush to check on their friend Jane. Inexplicably, their apartment hallway is chock full of a random collection of people. In addition to cops and first responders, there's nuns, bikers, pizza delivery guys, leather daddies, and people snapping photographs. They finally arrive to Jane's bedroom. A firefighter calls, "You don't want to go in there. It's not pretty." What is this horrific scene? Oh, Jane's head is stuck on Frank Todd's junk. Because he had a piercing and it got caught in the back of her throat. I mean, mind you, does not sound comfortable in the least. However, there are worse things that I could think of. Mm-hmm. However, they can't figure out how to get her head removed from his junk. Her friends jump right in to help and try pulling the couple apart, which, duh, the other people had already tried. Their cries of pain let them know that's not the way to separate them. An EMT informs them that they gotta go. They have everything set up at the hospital, but Courtney and Christina have one last idea. They encourage Jane. Sing! It will relax your throat! Courtney begins with, "Relax, don't do it when you gotta get to it. Relax, don't do it when you wanna come." And Corinne suddenly realizes that this song is really all about having sex, which I never figured out before. Don't ask me why. Todd confesses, "That's making me hard." So the friends try something milder and sing, "Don't wanna close my eyes. I don't wanna fall asleep because I miss you, babe. And I don't wanna miss a thing." By the time they get to the fourth line, Jane tries singing along and so does everyone else. The crowd joins in for heartfelt rendition of the Aerosmith song. And Jane goes, oh, 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 ultimately relaxing her throat enough so that she pops right off of Todd Frank's cock, and the day is saved. Yay!
Beautiful rendition of cock full of, what was that song called?
Don't Want to Miss a Thing? I don't know.
I don't have the energy to look it up at this point, so we'll just say, yeah, that one. 3 weeks later, the trio of friends is having lunch together, and with them is a guy. Courtney is regaling him with an embarrassing story of how moved teen Christina got over Milli Vanilli songs.
Aww.
And Christina counters, I don't even know why I started talking to her in the second grade. Just then, the guy's phone pings, and he gets a very exciting message. They found a donor for his patient. He leaves, and we find out that the guy is Courtney's new beau, and that the friends are meeting him for the first time.
Yay.
They all think he's great, and Courtney keeps telling them, stop talking or else you're going to jinx it. Jane asks jokingly, he doesn't have any piercings, does he? And Courtney admits that she doesn't know because they haven't done it yet.
Ooh.
The friends gasp because that means she really likes him. Meanwhile, back in Somerset, Peter meets his brother Roger outside a cafe. Peter's finishing up some paperwork before leaving to Costa Rica that evening on a vacation, but not before warning his brother to stop eating the fat-free potato chips that have Olean on them that he was hoovering because they cause anal leakage. And that was the blast from the past where,
yeah,
I was like, oh my God, I so remember that. Olean may cause anal leakage. Surprisingly, it didn't last long on the market.
Shocker. When I eat potato chips, you know what I want to do? Just have the shits all over the place.
I ate a bunch of those one time to see if it would happen, and it didn't, surprisingly.
Oh, good.
But Larry says I have a stomach of steel, and
that's
maybe
true.
It could beat Olean. And I especially liked when Peter was like, that causes anal leakage. And Roger's like, you cause anal leakage.
Yeah.
And then figures out that it does actually say that on the bag and bits all the chips out like shots fired. And I wrote, isn't that a blast from the past? Quite literally. Ha ha. They see Vera struggling to pull a mannequin over the curb and get up to help after a speeding car plows over a second mannequin, nearly missing Vera. Vera thanks the boys profusely and asks Peter, once they help her bring the mannequin back into her store, if he'd like to be on the mailing list since he's leaving town. He happily agrees while his brother hisses behind him, Peter, I've been trying to get us off that list since 1982. But he scoffs and rifles through the pages of Vera's address book and comes across what Courtney wrote all those weeks ago. It reads, Christina Walters hearts Peter and Christina's address in San Francisco. Meanwhile, Christina, possibly stirred from her lunch with Courtney's potential new beau, is at home about to make a phone call when she notices Jane's 10 Commandments of Love book.
Oh no, girl, don't read it. Don't read it.
Yes, it's propaganda. Relationship propaganda. She picks it up and thumbs through it, and by the time Courtney and Jane arrive home from a shopping trip, she is in tears. Christina seems inconsolable as she tries to pick out the one rule that stuck out to her. She directs Courtney, read that, as she hands her the book, and Courtney does and recites, love what is possible. Oh, honey, you can't blame yourself. You didn't know he was getting married. Christina says, no, not that one. Rule number 10. And Jane, who's read the book, knows it by heart and offers, thou shalt not fear? Christina nods emphatically and regales her besties with what would have happened if Peter wasn't getting married. If they actually had a conversation or relationship, she would have just played games, kissed him and ran, or just given him the wrong number. Christina takes her long string of toilet paper that she spooled off the roll and plops in between her friends, and Courtney kisses her forehead. That seems to revive Chris because she pops up and says, let's go dancing. As if she wasn't just bawling her eyes out a second before.
Well, that's the obvious solution. When you're crying, what you need to do is go dancing. That's what they did
that
with Jane.
That is such a 20s thing to do.
Yeah. Tam, the next time you're upset, I'm just going to be like,
I'm gonna stop you right there. I'm going to stop you right there because I don't want you to even finish that sentence. Because if you take me out dancing, I will know that you hate me.
Fine.
I used to love going out in my 20s dancing, and then in my 30s it dawned on me, like, I can't hear you. Why are we here screaming at each other? This isn't a way to hang out. No, I don't want to dance. We cut to the ladies at the same nightclub. Courtney and Jane are sitting while Christina is tearing it up on the dance floor as if she's on a mission. Christina is approached by the same guy, half of the Circle of Love dude, and he shimmies up next to her, tells her his name is Donnie, and they dance for a bit before a slow song comes on. He goes to leave, but not before saying, "I'd like to take you out sometime." She asks for his card, and he gives it to her, adding, "You seem like a really nice person." Christina stays on the dance floor for a few beats before going after Donnie. She sits next to him at the bar and asks for a pen, and she scrolls her number on the back of his business card while explaining, "I wasn't going to call you, so now I'm giving you my number so you can call me because I found something out that's completely life-changing, and it's okay to take a chance because love is crazy, and it's taking a chance. Me and my girlfriend went on this crazy trip after this guy across the state. I mean, I went for somebody I didn't even know, and I don't even think I know you, but here I am, and I know that maybe if I take a chance with you that..." She gets cut off by Donnie, who was smiling through her whole love diatribe, but practically snarls at her, "Jeez, forget it. What's a guy gotta do to get laid around here?" Oof. Before leaving in a huff.
Asshole. In a huff!
I take that back. Larry said something else. He was like, "That guy obviously doesn't want to get laid."
Yup. The friends head home. Jane and Courtney get to the front stairs while Christina pays for the cab, and they're ecstatic. Because sitting on their stoop is Peter, who dozed off while waiting for Christina. Jane and Courtney leave Christina to handle the Peter situation, and Christina is excited, confused, and trying to figure out what her next step is, but doesn't get much time to think about it because Jane shouts, "Ka-ka! Ka-ka!" directly into Peter's ear on her way into the house, which shockingly, not shockingly, wakes up Peter. Once Christina and he are alone on the street, he immediately apologizes. "I came to say I'm sorry that I didn't tell you I was getting married." She shrugs. "That's fine. You're just one of those guys that needs one last fling before you get hitched." He shakes his head, arguing, "That's not true. You spilled my drink, bought me a beer, and we had fun and talked. That's all." Christina agrees and heads into the house, but Peter stops her by saying, "I didn't get married, and I came here because I really wanted to see you because that night I felt something, and I thought you might have felt something too." She felt his sweetest thing.
I love it how you waggle your eyebrows after you say that. Good line, Corinne. Good line.
Christina asks if the marriage got called off because of her, and he assures her that it didn't. They just weren't doing the right thing, and he explains, "Judy is fine. She's having a blast in Bali, and she really liked you. And why were you at my wedding?" Christina tries to play it off that it's just a crazy thing her friends do, but it's not believable. Peter gets closer and says, "I came here to see you. I felt something that night, and I wanted to see if the feeling is mutual." Her blank expression sends him reeling, and he begins backtracking. "Oh, the feelings are not mutual. I am a stupid man, and I'm going to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. Don't do it. There's a whole documentary about it." He leaves in a hurry. She watches him go, but then leans against the front door and says to herself, "I'm not going to be afraid." She runs up the stinking, super steep San Francisco hill with the tiny, tiny steps that are like running basically vertically up a hill.
And Corinne says, "If that was me, I'd probably just let him go." Oh, did he go up that steep, small stepped hill? Good riddance.
Yeah. Bye. I have accidentally taken the very steep way to a location in San Francisco, and I had regrets like nobody's business, and I was in the middle of this neighborhood with my nose practically like on the sidewalk in front of me, and there was no way but through. Oh,
but you made it on the other side, and here you are.
I did.
The other half of ODK.
I did, and I'm stronger for it.
We'll survive.
She runs down the street in his direction and finds him walking with a bouquet of flowers, trying to work up the courage to go back to her apartment. They meet on a street corner, and Christina admits, "I didn't handle that well. I came to your wedding because the feeling is mutual." And she grabs his head and says, "You better be a really good kisser." They mash faces together in a very passionate kiss. When they break apart, he's smiling, and she says, "Wow, that was really weak." He grabs her and kisses her again to prove himself. But when that kiss ends, she sighs, "You were so much better in my dream." He hands her the flowers and goes in for 1,000%. She's still not impressed and thanks him for the flowers and heads home calling back, "I'll call you sometime." Peter is livid and calls back, "I'm out of practice. I just woke up. Unbelievable." We see the same black letters flash across the screen. "Tell us about Christine Walters." Now it's Peter in front of the camera, and he slowly says, "Oh, I know Christina. She's the bitch who made my life a living hell. First she tried pawning me off on her friend, and then she showed up at my wedding. And when I tried apologizing, she said, 'You are just one of many.'" And while he's going on, a puppy hand puppet appears behind the couch he's sitting on and starts mimicking him. It's only there for a few moments before he grabs it and flings it along with Christina, who's attached to it, over the couch. They laugh as the camera pans out to reveal that they're in Christina's apartment. What? Jane, Courtney, and Roger are there hanging out, and the camera pans to a photograph of Peter and Christina in a tuxedo. And, well, Christina's not in a tuxedo. She's in a white wedding dress with their friends. And we know they wound up happily ever after. And isn't that the sweetest thing?
Oh, well, the sweetest thing.
No, no, it's
Baby's
not.
Baby's got blue skies. Baby's got blue skies, Corinne.
The end.
The end.
All right. Tamara, you want to lead us off with your dry kiss rating?
And as always, at the end of the movie, Corinne and I both give each our individual dry kiss ratings. And they are between 1 and 5. 1 kiss being do not watch. 2 kisses. If you only had 3 channels, you might watch it for a while before changing to an infomercial and then inadvertently buying yourself knives and then feel guilty, particularly when they don't cut cans as advertised. So many regrets. Or 3 kisses. Yay! Would kiss this movie again. 4 kisses is the date night you've been waiting for. And 5 kisses is if this movie was your life, then you would have gotten dressed by cute cartoon animals, some squirrels immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a unicorn. Oh. Okay, the reason why I love this movie, and I'm going to give it a little bit above average of 3.5 dry kisses, because A, I know it does not age well. B, I know it's like a snapshot in time, but I almost kind of like that, because the snapshot in time reminds you of that when you were living it. Oh my God, I forgot about Olean. Oh my God, I forgot I used to say bajiggity. I think I'm going to bring it back. Oh, I did call my pussy a punani once upon a time. Also think I'm bringing that back. But it was the first movie I think I actually saw where the women were the protagonists and they had the jokes. They weren't just the relationship that the funny guy had, or they weren't the butt of the jokes. They were the ones telling the jokes. And I don't think I had seen that before. And that is why this movie really resonates with me, because are some of the jokes bad? Absolutely. Is it raunchy humor? Yes. And sometimes I like raunchy humor. And seeing Christina Applegate and Cameron Diaz do raunchy well just sat on my heart and stayed there. Selma Blair, not so much. She could have probably not even been in this movie and it still would have been just as good. Not saying that she wasn't good in her role, but she was kind of like the tertiary friend that you were like, why are you here again?
Yeah.
Anyways, so it was just seeing that strong female lead for the first time and being like, oh my God, women can be funny if they want to. I'm going to quote this till the day I die, is why I picked this movie and why I am giving it 3.5 dry kisses. Corinne, I'm shuddering to think what you're going to give it, but I'm going to ask anyways, how many dry kisses are you giving it?
I am giving this movie 1.5 dry kisses.
Oh, it's better than Bridesmaids, which I did not think it would be in your eyes.
Yeah. Marginally better than Bridesmaids. There were like a couple of moments that didn't make me cringe in this movie. I liked the characters slightly better in this movie. Found them slightly more likable. But I saw Charlie's Angels in the year 2000, and that had female protagonists who were doing funny things. I don't like raunchy humor. This is like an early Bridesmaids. Yeah, I'm not into it. I saw it back in the movie theaters and I was like, oh, I didn't like it. But then I watched I Love You Man, which I was like, eh, when I saw it in the theater, and I was hoping that This movie would be like that.
Oh, no.
Once
again.
That was
an enigma and shan't ever happen again, I'm sure. Because when you told me that about I Love You, Man, I'm like, what, you liked it?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought, I was like, maybe I'll really like it, just like I Love You, Man. That didn't happen. No. I am one of the few people who's a fan of Cameron Diaz. So there is that. A lot of people have a problem with Cameron Diaz. But I am glad that this is a resonant movie that sits happily on your heart. And
I also didn't see Charlie's Angels when it came out, so maybe that's why I was like, oh my god, the sweetest thing is groundbreaking.
I don't know why you wouldn't have seen Charlie's Angels when it came out, but you know, whatever, it's fine.
Money. I did not have the money to go to the movies all the time and see all the things.
Oh yeah, that's what you date for. You get the guy to take you out, see?
Oh, Lord, where was I in 2002? Oh, me and Dan just got together. Yeah, no, he was broke.
So, not a fan. Not going to watch this movie ever again. And so, moving on to the Four Musketeers of Diversity.
Going to say, hard no on 3 out of 4. It does not have body diversity. You said this was the heroin chic era, which
yeah.
is absolutely correct. The only sexual diversity we saw were possibly the leather clad biker guys.
Yeah.
What would you call them?
Leather daddies.
Leather boys. Leather daddies. Thank you.
Yeah.
The leather daddies in the apartment that kissed. No racial diversity. There's absolutely no people of color in San Francisco or Somerset, apparently.
Well, Somerset doesn't even have Jews, apparently. So there you go.
Yeah.
Not creepy and at then... all. The disability representation.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't that either. No musketeers at the table. I did want to point out, though, from slight correction corner, in the kissing booth, we did not address this. One of the OMGs was African-American.
Mm.
Yeah. So the table is empty. No one Balian is showing up at this movie.
All right. So the first grab bag topic we're going to pull from our ratings bag is the Kiss Tractor Beam. Corinne, do you have anything to say? Was there a Kiss Tractor Beam in this movie? When? Where was it? And how did you feel about it?
I gotta say, I know that the kiss at the end was supposed to be romantic with the flowers, but the sexual tension was just not there for the kiss. Particularly after the first kiss when she's like, meh. And then he gives like more and more forceful kisses that actually just don't look romantic at all. They just kind of look forceful and uncomfortable. So yeah, I would say the kiss tractor beam flickered out right quick for me. What about you?
I do have to say that's one of the things that I didn't like about this movie is when I first saw it, I thought it was funny that she was like, that was really weak. And then he keeps kissing her. Yeah. And I thought, like, eventually she would let him off the hook and be like,
yeah,
I'm just messing with you. But we never see that conversation.
Nope.
And I know they cut that out so we can have the end scene where he's talking to the video camera, which we find out is being controlled by Courtney. So theoretically, Courtney was in the bathroom recording Wet Naked Man talking about Christina Walters for no obvious reason, because they were already married. So it's not like they were doing it for some like bachelorette party,
yeah,
funny video montage,
right,
to present at a special occasion. But I didn't like that. We didn't see that. And so when they did get together and you're like, oh good, they did get together, that was like momentarily. And then now that I watch it back, I'm like, I would have just liked to see the happily ever after kiss, because it almost feels like a cop out. You don't see the kiss and I try to figure out like what the fuck happened after the
right
screen faded to black to get him and her together. Was she really just fucking with him, or did he just really, really try hard? Or was it that same old thing that she's playing games and yada, yada,
yeah,
yada? So there, like, it raised a lot of questions that I didn't necessarily like. Like, I wanted it in a nice, neat package with the bow on top of it. And the way they ended it, it was in a package, but it was partially unwrapped and squished on the side. But, you know, it was there.
Yeah. It was kind of like a flaming bag of poop, in my opinion. But, you know.
I wouldn't go so far as to call it a flaming bag of poop. I just didn't think like it was the best romantic comedy ending or even remotely good, except for the, you know, the way they tied it up. But the way they tied it up again was clunky and didn't really make sense with the beginning if you really look at the whole picture.
Yeah.
And the second, we've already talked about this, so I need not pull something from our wonderful bag, is we have to look at the man in the mirror, or the woman in the mirror. Because who would you say between the two of us, Corinne, who's the Courtney and who's the Christina? Or are we both or either or none or neither?
I would say I related most to Jane.
Jane?
Yeah.
I would have to say that I saw more Courtney in you. Not only was it the car, but you're the adventurous one out of the two of us. So if I was hemming and hawing and be like, I kind of think I want to do this, you'd be like, oh, then we're doing it.
No, that's true.
No, yeah, you, let's go. Come on, let's not think about it. Let's hit the road. Let's go. Let's out the door. Blah, blah, blah. So that I saw the more Courtney in you.
Yeah.
And I have to say the same. Like, I don't think I don't resonate with Courtney or Christina. I'm not a player. I'm not brave like you. My car is pretty clean. I think I identify as Vera. I have a house of beauty. And if you're nice to me, I'll let you inside. She's honestly like a Disney character come to life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think if I had to choose between the Christina or Courtney, I would say I'm more Courtney, but I'm not much like either of them. I think that you're more Courtney than I am, and I'm only slightly so.
Yeah, I definitely do have Courtney's car.
Yes, you do. We've never found maggots or anything
in
it.
No.
But I have crawled in the back in some clutter to find some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we're doing The Sister Act. And I solemnly swear that I will press the record button right when we start.
I'm so excited. Whoopi Goldberg singing the whole nine yards. It's going to be nuns. How can you go wrong?
And we're moving from SoCal. Well, this week we're in NorCal, and next week we'll be in NorCal. So yeah. We moved from SoCal to NorCal. Who has the superior movies? I guess we'll know after this month is up.
And so if you have anything you'd like to say about Sister Act, the sweetest thing, or your sweetest thing, you can reach out to us via email. I made Tamara Setter. It was amazing.
It's cold in here.
You can reach out to us via email, onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, X, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with
one dry kiss.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Together to Christina's quintessential. I can say this, quintessential.
Okay, but I just banged the mic.